The Franchise Geeks present Social Geek Radio. Hello, geeks. Jack Munson here, your social media consigliere. This episode today is brought to you by Social Joey and Franchise Dictionary Magazine. We've got a lot to talk about today. Lots of good IFA and election and political geekery that we're going to get into this afternoon. But first, I wanted to mention that coming up next week in Miami, I'll be speaking on a panel at the IFA Emerging Franchisor Conference. That's happening next Wednesday through Friday, November 7th, 8th, and 9th. Details and registration available right now at franchise.org. The panel is going to be called Grow Your Franchise Through Social Media, and I'll be joined by some superstars in the franchise world, Michael Barnett, the co-founder of Romp and Roll, Devin Klein, president and CEO of Burn Bootcamp, and our good friend Deb Evans, who's now a Whoops franchisee. And Deb will be joining us back here on the radio show in the very near future. So if you're going to the Emerging Franchisor Conference, I hope to see you at the panel on Friday the 9th. Speaking of the International Franchise Association, today we have the privilege of having the Senior Vice President of Public Affairs with the IFA join us. It's Matt Haller. How are you, Matt?
Jack, I'm doing great. I swear we didn't coordinate this, but I will be at the Emerging Franchisor Conference too.
You will.
And I will be giving the actual flip of what we're going to talk about today, because we will know, hopefully, the outcome of the election. So today we're going to play prediction game, which is scary right now to do, but given everybody was wrong in 2016, but we're going to do it again in 2018.
Let's jump right into predictions. What are you seeing out there right now? What do you see as the outcome? And let's start off hot with predictions.
Okay. Prediction. I am still somewhat bullish on Republicans possibly keeping control of both the House and the Senate. I think the Senate is a 99% certainty, although, you know, a week and a half is still a lifetime in politics. I think the House, it's hard to say. I mean, most Republicans are sort of planning for the worst and still hoping for the best. The map is just really difficult in the House because you have so many seats that Republicans currently occupy, many of which were won by Hillary Clinton. So these are suburban seats like, you know, where you live, Jack, in suburban Chicago.
Right.
Or where I grew up, just across the river in suburban Virginia, across the river from D.C. And, you know, these are places where you have, you know, moderates, mostly people that aren't voting on social issues really ever. They're voting on their pocketbooks, but there's also a lot of people that are frustrated with the president, and they might take it out on an incumbent that still has a somewhat uneasy relationship with the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, it's been very interesting to see how some congressional Republicans are embracing the president, and some are putting an arm's length and some are putting a truck's length between themselves and the president right now. I had the opportunity to spend some time last week in Missouri, where there is a hot, hot Senate race going on. I've never seen so many ad dollars being spent on a Missouri Senate race in my life. And the candidate there is just, you know, fully embracing the Trump nation. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah, you know, Missouri Senate race is an interesting one. You've got Claire McCaskill, who's an incumbent senator, running for third term. And she's running this time against a very popular current state Republican Attorney General, Josh Hawley. And, you know, Missouri is a state that's gotten increasingly red over the last decade. I think Trump won Missouri by, you know, close to 20 points.
Yeah.
And, you know, McCaskill's latest ad is fascinating. I was actually watching it last night. She is essentially trashing the progressives and the quote crazy Democrats in the state, because she's trying to pivot to the center and really, you know, appeal to some Trump voters.
Yeah.
But, you know, her challenge is that she hasn't voted for a lot of the economic agenda, let alone, you know, other issues like Kavanaugh, that, you know, the Republican majorities have, you know, pushed through, whether it's deregulation efforts or tax bill, and things like that. So she's really trying to appeal to that moderate or, you know, even some Republican voters that maybe, you know, she thinks she can get, but I think that's going to be one that Republicans pick up.
Yeah. And I think the Senate looks like the exact opposite side of the coin from the House in that, you know, you were mentioning that there were a lot of congressional districts that went to Hillary Clinton that Republicans are going to be very hard pressed to hold on to. And the Senate's just the opposite. We've got, what are there, about five or six states where they're pretty red states that have a Democrat currently. I think the Democrats could lose four. My prediction on the Senate is not only the GOP is going to hold the Senate, I think they're going to increase it to maybe 54. That's the number I'm looking at.
Yeah, I think it's going to be 53.
Okay.
But I think it could go as high as 55. There's
wow.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I think Missouri and North Dakota are absolute guarantees.
Mm-hmm.
At this point.
Maybe Indiana.
I think Indiana is in that next tier, mm-hmm. and I think Florida is right behind it.
Yeah, but you know, one thing, looking at these numbers, you know, one thing I think, never say never, but I don't think any party is ever going to get to 60 again. I just don't see it. I don't see in this day and age, I can't imagine how either party's ever going to get to 60.
I agree. I agree completely. And next cycle, Republicans have the exact opposite problem.
Exactly.
Democrats have right now, in that they will be, their incumbents who are up for re-election in the Senate are in purple states.
Right.
So North Carolina, Colorado, so that's a challenge for, you know, not, they're not moderates. I mean, Cory Gardner and Tom Tillis are not moderates by any means, but they're you know, consensus builders more than they are, you know, hardliners.
Right.
And so that challenge when you have, you know, a president that's really doing a lot to just appeal to his base. Like, it's difficult this year for the Joe Donnellys and the Heidi Heitkamps in those, you know, very red states who are Democratic senators.
On the House side, I'm with you. I really think the polls that I've seen are not convincing me like they were a month ago that this blue wave is a real thing. So I'm predicting that the Republicans will hold the House by a very thin margin. I think we could see a repeat of the 2016 presidential election where, you know, everyone was predicting a Hillary Clinton win by, you know, 80% chance to win, and it didn't happen. And I think the polling is so untrustworthy at this point that I really think we could see a repeat of that. You know what really drives me nuts when it comes to congressional polls is the entire idea of these national polls, you know, who would you vote for, a Republican or Democrat? And it's like, that's not how this works, right? No one votes for a generic person across the entire country. It's all voting for that person in Missouri or Indiana or wherever. So anytime I see those generic national polls, which party would you prefer? I always think right away, man, somebody's got an agenda behind that poll.
Yeah, I think it's all just designed to measure national mood and maybe voter energy for a particular candidate. But you're right. I mean, particularly for congressional districts, I mean, these are going to be decided. In a lot of cases, if Republicans prevail, it will be because they've been able to differentiate themselves from the national kind of, if you put on any cable news network right now, they've been able to differentiate themselves from that.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah,
they're a commodity, right? Go with the name, you know, not, you know, risk, somebody new. And if Democrats win, then I think that's in a lot of these swing districts, they've been able to kind of nationalize, that race. It's just a fascinating statistic. if you live near a Whole Foods, your district is much more likely to be held or become a Democratic district, whereas if you live near a Cracker Barrel, then you are 76% likely to be in a Republican district.
Now, now, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Is it a predictor that your district's going to go blue because you're near a Whole Foods, or did Whole Foods put a store there because it's most likely a blue district?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, Jack.
Well, okay, so we're both on the record saying Republicans will most likely hold, and I do want to mention that in June of 2016 on this very radio program, I went on record saying that two important things would happen that year. Trump would win the White House, and I was right on that. And I also predicted that the Chicago Cubs would win the World Series that year, and I was correct on that as well. So, but truth be told, I predict that for the Cubs every year. So now we've got our predictions down. Depending upon how things go, and again, we'll know very shortly, how does this composition of Congress affect what you're working on and what many of our listeners are working on?
If the Democrats control the House and Republicans maintain control of the Senate, one of the things that will undoubtedly happen is a lot of the labor community's wish list will be advanced through the House, in my view, certainly out of committee. And, the Democrats view the labor and workforce committees as sort of primary committees, whereas the Republicans view them as secondary committees. And what I mean by that is most committee seats are seats that members try to get on for, political benefit as much as they do for policymaking. So Democrats want to be on the labor committee because the labor unions are their largest campaign contributors. Republicans really want to be on committees like Ways and Means, Finance, Energy and Commerce, where there's a lot of opportunities to, deal with very, important but also well-funded issues to help with their fundraising. So I think it's very likely that there would be a $15 minimum wage bill introduced and moved through that committee. I think it's also very likely that things like card check and kind of a broader labor wish list bill that was introduced this Congress and I believe has over 100 co-sponsors already, called the Workplace Democracy Act, would be introduced and possibly moved through committee. And that includes really damaging policies that are now trying to take hold within the progressive part of the Democratic Party. And that means things like codification of the broader joint employer standard. So everybody in franchising has been paying attention to the joint employer issue through the regulatory process and through the at the NLRB and through the Department of Labor. That's all been regulatory and legal precedent. So in some Democrats' minds, they want to just per se, rewrite the statute that would hold franchisors and franchisees as one entity. And that is, going much further than the Obama administration went. So our job in franchising, if that happens, is to keep moderate Democrats from, instinctively supporting that because it's something that labor may want them to do. So a lot of the work we've done over the last 3-4 years to educate and try to move legislation that clears up the joint employer issue will be very helpful in that effort in a potential Democrat-controlled House of Representatives. Kind of building a gatehouse defense is how I like to describe it. You just need to keep it from moving to the floor of the House for a vote, or if it's a closely divided House and you have a 10-seat Democratic majority, you just have to convince, all Republicans, which we think we probably can do, and let's say, 11 Democrats from supporting that type of a bill, and you've effectively killed it.
And then the next couple of years become even more important because who knows what could happen in 2020, right?
That's right. I mean, I'm careful to predict even 10 days from now, let alone 2.5 years from now. But, you know, I think the most interesting thing to watch on the 2020 outlook is how many nominees or candidates for president will there be in the Democratic Party?
Yeah, and I'm going to say right there's going to be 2 dozen, don't you think? I mean, it just feel like there's going to be, they're going to be coming out of the woodwork.
At least.
Yeah.
And I think it will be challenging for the Democrats in Congress to deal with policymaking when they're getting pulled so far to the left to hold, you know, Trump and congressional Republicans accountable on a lot of issues that I view are going to be pretty far out of the mainstream of America. And what will that do to their ability to, you know, pivot after, you know, a potential primary?
Right. You mentioned joint employer and the NLRB. Can you give us an update on where we are with a bunch of those things and kind of what you guys are working on day to day right now, even before the elections?
Yeah, of course. So really important process began about 45 days ago at the National Labor Relations Board. The board chairman, John Ring, began what's known as a notice of proposed rulemaking to narrow the definition of joint employment back to sanity. So that's a 60-day process where groups like IFA and our other trade association allies in the business community are all preparing comments to the NLRB, you know, making the case for why a more clearly and narrowly defined standard is important to businesses and to employees and to the economy. So that comment period closes on November 13th, so 1 week after Election Day. And we also have, just like we have all of our members doing grassroots to Capitol Hill, we strongly are encouraging our members to submit comments through our platform to the NLRB. So just the same way, you can text rulemaking to 52886 and you'll get a bounce back text message walking you through how to do that. But that's really important. So we're doing substantive comments and we're doing interviews with franchisors and franchisees to learn about the different ways that the broader standard that the board adopted a couple of years ago has impacted the business model, you know, curtailing all sorts of services and products and things that franchisors used to provide and support their franchisees, increasing in a significant way the costs on franchisees from, you know, legal costs to developing job descriptions and other sorts of things that they are now required to do, because in the past franchisors provided a lending hand in that, and that creates too much ambiguity now. So we really encourage our members to engage in that process, and they should contact me if they're interested in learning more about how to do that.
Okay, very good. And again, they can text the word rulemaking, all one word, and that's to the number
52886.
52886. Very good. And we will have information on that on the Social Geek Radio page for this podcast, and also on our Facebook page as well. Matt, we're going to come back to wrap up in just a second, but I did want to mention that today's episode is brought to you by Franchise Dictionary Magazine. The November issue is out soon, focusing on franchises about pets and franchises for vets. You can check it out on November 1st at franchisedictionarymagazine.com. Matt, thanks so much for joining us today. If people want to first get involved, where can we send them as far as website or pages where they can get involved? And then if they've got specific questions for you on any of the things we discussed today, where's the best place to reach you?
Yeah, best way to get involved in the public affairs efforts is to go to the Franchise Action Network site. So that's just franchiseactionnetwork.com. And you can sign up there. You'll get our biweekly newsletter where we update you on all the issues and opportunities to be engaged and highlight different franchisees and franchisors and suppliers who have spoken out or attended an event, that's a really great way. And we also push issue alerts at a national level or at a local level. We have an event happening, like we've got an event coming up in Cincinnati and Columbus next week with a Senate candidate, Jim Renacci, who's challenging Sherrod Brown there at a Franchise Business Network. So that's franchiseactionnetwork.com. If you want to connect with me or have questions, you can just find me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way to do it. And feel free to tag me or message me there, and I would be happy to get back to you.
Excellent. Very good. And we will see you next week in Miami at the IFA Emerging Franchisor Conference. Matt, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining Social Geek Radio today.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, and good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Social Geek Radio. Copyright 2018 Social Geek Radio.